Chapter 16. I heard Devereaux leave the hotel at 7:20, exactly. First, the street door creaked open and slammed shut, and then her car door creaked open and slammed shut. I got up and looked out the window. She was behind the wheel, low in the seat, in what looked like a clean version of the same uniform she had worn the day before. Her riot of hair was still wet from the shower. She was talking on the radio, probably telling Pellegrino that job one for the day was to haul my ass halfway back to Memphis. I went down the stairs and stepped out to the sidewalk. The morning air was fresh and cold. I looked up the street and saw that Devereaux's car was parked again right outside the diner. So far, so good. I walked in that direction and pushed in through the door, past the payphone, past the hostess station. There were 6 customers inside, including Devereaux. The other 5 were men, 4 of them in work clothes, and the 5th in a pale-colored suit. A professional gentleman. Maybe a country lawyer, or a country doctor, or the guy that ran the loan office next to Brannan's bar. The waitress was the same woman as the night before. She was busy toting plates of food, so I didn't wait for her. I just walked up to Devereaux's table and said, "Would you mind if I joined you?" She was sipping coffee. She didn't have her food yet. She smiled and said, "Good morning." Her tone was warm. She seemed happy to see me. I said, "Yes, good morning." She said, "Have you come to say goodbye? That's very polite and very formal." I said nothing in reply to that. She did her thing with her foot again, under the table, and kicked the facing chair out. I sat down. She asked, "Did you sleep well?" I said, "Fine." "The train didn't wake you at midnight? It takes some getting used to." "I was still up," I said.
"Doing what?"
"Listen that," I said.
"Inside or out?"
"Out," I said.
"You found the crime scene?"
I nodded. She nodded in turn.
"And you found 2 things of note," she said. "So you thought you'd stop by and make sure I appreciated their significance before you got on your way. That's very public-spirited of you."
The waitress came by and put a heaping plate of French toast on the table. Then she turned to me and I ordered the same thing, with coffee. Devereaux waited until she was gone and asked,
"Oh, was it entirely private-spirited? Is this your one last attempt to protect the army before you go?"
"I'm not going," I said. She smiled again.
"Are you going to give me your civil rights speech now? Free country and all that bullshit?"
"Something like that." She paused a beat.
"I'm all for civil rights," she said. "And certainly there's room at the inn, as they say. So sure, by all means, please, stay. Enjoy yourself. There are trails to hike, and there are things to hunt, and there are sights to see. Knock yourself out. Do whatever you want to. Just don't get between me and my investigation."
I asked her, "How do you explain the 2 things?"
"Do I need to? To you?"
"2 heads are better than 1.
"I can't trust you," she said. "You're here to steer me wrong if you have to."
"No. I'm here to warn the army if things start to look bad, which I will, if I have to. But we're a long way from any kind of a conclusion here. We've barely even started. It's too early to steer anybody anywhere, even if I was going to, which I'm not."
"We," she said. "We're a long way from a conclusion. What is this, a democracy?"
"Okay. You," I said.
"Yes," she said. "Me."
At that point, the waitress came back with my meal and my coffee. I sniffed the steam and took a long first sip. A little ritual. Nothing better than just made coffee early in the morning. Across the table from me, Devereaux continued eating. She was cleaning her plate. A metabolism like a nuclear plant. She said,
"Okay. Time out.
Convince me. Put your cards on the table. Tell me about the first thing and spin it so it looks bad for the army." Which it does, by the way. Spin or no spin. I looked straight at her. "Have you been on the base?"
"All over it."
"I haven't. Therefore, apparently you know what I'm only guessing." She nodded.
"So bear that in mind. Tread carefully. Don't blow smoke."
I said, "Janice Mae Chapman was not raped in that alley."
"Because?"
"Because Pellegrino reported gravel abrasions on the corpse, and there's no gravel in that alley, nor anywhere else that I could see. It's all dirt or blacktop or smooth paving stones for miles around."
"The railroad track has gravel," she said.
A test. She wanted me to jump all over it. "Not really gravel," I said. "The railroad track has larger stones. Ballast, they call it. In a rail bed. Pieces of granite, bigger than a pebble, smaller than a fist. The injuries would look completely different. They wouldn't look like gravel rash."
"The roads are gravel."
Another test. "Bound with tar and rolled," I said. "Not the same at all."
"So..."
The final test. "Spin it so it looks bad for the army." "Kellum is for the elite," I said. "It's a finishing school for the 75th, which is special ops support. It's a big place. They must have all kinds of simulated terrain. Sand to simulate the desert, concrete like the frozen steppes, fake villages, all that kind of shit. I'm sure they have plenty of gravel there, for one reason or another." Devereaux nodded again.
"They have a running track made of gravel for endurance training. 10 laps is like 10 hours on a road surface. Plus, low-scoring individuals get to rake it smooth every morning as a punishment. 2 birds with 1 stone.
I said nothing. Devereaux said,
"She was raped on the base."
I said, "Not impossible." Devereaux said,
"You're an honest man, Reacher. The son of a Marine."
"Marines have got nothing to do with it. I'm a commissioned officer in the United States Army. We have standards, too." I started to eat my breakfast just as she finished hers. She said,
"The second thing is more problematical, though I can't make it fit."
"Really?" I said. "Isn't it basically the same as the first thing?" She looked at me, blankly. She said,
"I don't see how."
I stopped eating and looked back at her. I said, "Talk me through it."
"It's a simple question," she said. "How did she get there?"
"She left her car at home, and she didn't walk. For one thing, she was wearing 4-inch heels, and for another thing, no one walks anywhere anymore.
But she wasn't picked up from home either. Her neighbors are the worst busybodies in the world, and both of them swear no one came calling on her. And I believe them. And no one saw her arrive in town with a soldier, or with a civilian, for that matter, or even on her own. And trust me, those barkeeps watch the traffic. All of them. It's a habit. They want to know if they can afford to eat tomorrow. So she just materialized in that alley, unexplained."
I was quiet for a second. Then I said, "That wasn't my second thing."
"Wasn't it?"
"Your 2 things and my 2 things are not the same 2 things, which means there are 3 things in total."
"So what's your second thing?"
I said, She wasn't killed in that alley, either.